nothing is going to teach you leadership skills like running a company, especially when you've never had that experience. So I started by assuming I knew nothing and asking a lot of questions and listening to what people told me and then acting on it. And I feel like that's what every leader should do.
Welcome to ProCo 360. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. This show is for people who love Colorado and who are fascinated with stories of Colorado companies and their leaders. Success looks different here. Our lives are multidimensional, and that's why the tagline is Live, Work, Love Colorado. In this episode, I'm on the road. I'm speaking with Kerry Siggins, CEO of Stone Age Water Blast Tools. This is a Durango, Colorado company selling its products through offices around the world. If you think Water Blast products are cool, you'll like this interview. If you think an employee-owned industrial company with a female CEO who speaks and writes about leadership could be pretty interesting, you'll enjoy this episode of ProCo 360. Before we jump in, let me give a big thank you to our studio hosts, Dustin and Ty here at 92.9 The Point, to Stephanie Schnur at the Holiday Inn Hotel and Suites in Durango. She's putting me up. And to Jack Llewellyn, head of the Durango Chamber of Commerce, for making these introductions and handling my logistics. Kerry, thanks for being on ProCo 360.
Thanks for having me.
Kerry looks wide awake, but she just flew in from the Netherlands last night, so I'm really glad you're here.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
We'll keep things moving so you stay awake. And so let's start, though, with an overview of Stone Age, maybe the problem you're solving for your customers, and then the size and scale.
Sure. So for anybody who's wondering what a water blast tool is, it's basically a squirt gun on steroids.
Yeah.
It's the best way to explain it to people. So we help our customers clean really hard cleaning applications. So our tools are used in refineries, chemical plants, petrochem plants, shipyards, anywhere you'd use ultra high pressure water to clean. And we're talking really high pressure. So the pressure at a car wash is about 700 PSI, which is enough to remove the dirt, but not the paint. Mm-hmm. Our tools start at 2,500 PSI and go to 40,000. So,
40,000.
Yeah.
This could basically take a limb off your body.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. And so your customers, though, are all over the world. They're buying your products made in Durango, right?
That's correct.
And how did you start a company in Durango that's now international and really dominating in this really specialty niche?
Sure. So our two founders, one is from Durango, one is from Denver. They met at the Colorado School of Mines, and they developed their first product for uranium mining applications. And there's a lot of uranium in the Four Corners area. And they developed the first water jet rock drill. And then Three Mile Island accident happened in the late 70s, and no more nuclear power generation was going to happen. So they had to pivot. And they did several civil engineering projects, which is where the name Stone Age came from. And then they met a industrial cleaning contractor who said, if you can clean, if you can cut holes in rocks with that, you can clean this heat exchanger. And so that's how they pivoted into industrial cleaning. But they really wanted to keep the company here in Durango. That was something that was incredibly important to the men, still is.
Yeah.
And so we have figured out how to remain here, even though our customer base is not in Durango.
Yeah. And you've got offices. How many offices around the world do you have?
We have, besides our headquarters here in Durango, we have three in the United States and two in Europe.
Wow.
And then we have employees all over the world.
That's so cool. And speaking about employees all over the world, one of the reasons I really wanted to speak with Kerry is because of your focus and intense interest in leadership, the topic of leadership, becoming a better leader, and so forth. And as much as water blasting tools are cool, I think talking about leadership is maybe a broader interest to the audience, right? So let's start with when you began a focus on becoming a leader.
Sure. So I was hired relatively young at the ripe age of 28. I had just turned 28 when John and Jerry, our founders, had made the decision to hire me. And I have always been a natural leader, but nothing is going to teach you leadership skills like running a company, especially when you've never had that experience. So I was pretty much thrown into it and had to learn on the job. And I would say that I started by assuming I knew nothing and asking a lot of questions and listening to what people told me and then acting on it. And I feel like that's what every leader should do. Mm-hmm. I just didn't have a choice. I had no idea how to run a company. I knew nothing about industrial cleaning and water blasting tools. So I had to learn so much. And that that experience at the very beginning of my leadership journey has really informed even still how I lead today, which is asking a lot of questions and letting other people tell me what I need to do. Mm-hmm. And it's really worked for me.
Yeah. You know, that doesn't strike me as what most people think of leadership, which is it's almost the opposite. Mm-hmm. Most entrepreneurs, and maybe this is where you're different because you didn't actually start the company, but most entrepreneurs, I think, at least I did, felt they should have the answers and be in a position to say what needs to be done.
Sure. Well, don't get me wrong. I definitely have my opinions on what needs to be done. But what I'm trying to create, what Stone Age and John and Jerry really were creating, was a company that wasn't dependent on any one person. And it really takes all of us. And I surround myself with people who are much, much smarter than me and have different talents than I have. And so if I'm going to hire the best and not listen to them, and not let them develop their own ideas, then, you know, I don't really know what the point of hiring really great people. So my job is to create a really great team, set the vision, and then try to get out of the way and course correct and do what I'm really good at. But it's really about the company is only as good as the weakest team member. And so my goal is to have all really great teammates. And then you can't help but have a successful company.
Well, if it's only as successful as the weakest team member, does that mean part of your job is making sure there aren't any?
Yeah, I work really hard on it. And it's all about people development.
Well, going back, because some of the listeners are entrepreneurs, they're people that are starting companies or thinking about starting companies. And, you know, you at 28 thought you were a natural born leader. Mm-hmm. Knowing what you know now, is that such a thing? What's your thinking?
So you're asking me, are leaders born or are leaders made?
Yeah, of course. That's the, people use that phrase a lot.
Sure.
Which is it?
I think it can be both. I think that there are people who absolutely have natural leadership skills who step into those roles easily. But I'm a huge believer in self-leadership. In fact, that's what we're developing at Stone Age, our self-leaders. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to manage people or lead a company or even lead a department.
Yeah.
But you can still be a self-leader, which is how you choose to show up every day, what kind of teammate you're going to be. So I believe that every human being has the ability to be a self-leader.
Mm-hmm.
But some of that has to be developed because if you're not, if you don't ever feel that personal power, and I don't like to use the word empowered because it feels like you're bestowing somebody.
Which they should already have, really, right?
It's that personal power and the self-confidence. And sometimes that has to be developed in people. And so I've seen people who haven't felt that they were natural born leaders turn into some of the very best individual contributor leaders within Stone Age.
Yeah, there's a cool book and a friend of mine, Aaron Dignan, wrote called Brave New Work. And a lot of that has to do with how do you create an environment where people can govern their behavior within a much broader construct.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I'm curious, too, as I thought about this interview and you becoming a leader at 28, actually, when you were hired as someone that they wanted to eventually hope would take over the company, right?
Right.
So how do other people in the room who know that, other people in the company see, oh, here's this 28-year-old know-nothing who they're hiring. How does that change your behavior or did it change your behavior? And how did that feel?
Sure. I know for a fact there were several people who said, what are you doing? Huh.
To the owners or to you?
Yes, to them. Yeah. Why are you hiring her? And I think that even they probably questioned that too. I know that they did. Mm-hmm. It was, how do we bring in somebody who doesn't have the experience and choose this candidate over people who did?
Yeah.
But it was really about the cultural fit. And and so, yes, it put a lot of pressure on me of feeling like I had to prove myself. And I definitely made some missteps along the way where I would come in too forceful of this is how we're going to do it and would learn a lesson about, you know, really it's about bringing everybody along. So it was a very interesting first couple of years as I was trying to navigate two founders, a company who had only been led by them and a management team who was really looking for that, you know, how do we take it to the next level? So it was a lot of fun, but there were some tears, that's for sure.
So can you think of a time, you know, you said you came in too forcefully. I mean, you must be picturing something. What happened? What did you do that, like, wow, I don't want to do that again?
Yeah. There was one that vividly I remember, and I made an assumption. I didn't get all the information. I made an assumption about how something was done, and it wasn't accurate. And I came down hard on a person in public in front of a group over it. And it really damaged that relationship. And it made also other people nervous about bringing things up to me because they said, you know, she didn't listen. And it still sticks in my mind of like, I'm never doing that again. I'm going to make sure that I know everything before I make a call like that.
Yeah. Especially, and especially when in public, right?
Oh yeah. It was a big mistake.
I had a really successful uncle who I worked for a couple of years who once said, and I remember I've told my boys, you haven't learned your lesson until you do it right the next time. Mm-hmm. People always say, oh, I learned my lesson. Nah, not necessarily, right?
I love that. I haven't heard that. That's good.
Yeah. And you know, I can just imagine, though, how the owners of that company saw you do that. They must have been squirming, thinking, oh, my gosh.
They are, I'll tell you, they're two of the most inspiring people I've ever met. And they really, it's profound, actually, how fast they were willing to hand the reins over to me. But they knew that to have a sustainable company and to create their legacy, they were going to have to hand it over. And so they were willing to go along on that ride with me. But there were some course corrections, and there were certainly very difficult conversations about, you know, the direction that the company needed to go. But we just committed at the very beginning to work together to resolve any kind of issue that came up. And that's what we did.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And to some extent, it makes me feel like they got kind of lucky in that they chose someone who was correctable.
Yeah. I think, to be honest, considering what I've learned about founder professional management transitions, I do believe that this is a pretty unique situation. And I think that it was the right combination of their style and my style.
Wow.
I'm not sure that many other people could have been successful in it, but it just clicked with us from the very beginning.
Wow. Listeners, I'm going to remind you, this is ProCo 360. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and this is the show featuring entrepreneurs who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. I'm speaking with Carrie Siggins of Stone Age Water Blast Tools, and this is a great time to thank our sponsors, Community Banks of Colorado, MicroStar Keg Logistics, and Kinsley Meetings. These great service companies support Colorado businesses and entrepreneurs, and they support this show. Thanks also to the Colorado Chamber of Commerce for its support for me and ProCo 360. So under your guidance then, Carrie, how long had you been there before you decided it's time to make this company employee-owned?
Well, interestingly, we've been employee-owned for almost 30 years. John and Jerry decided that they wanted to share in the success of the company long before we became an ESOP. And so they created a homegrown stock ownership program where employees could invest in the company and become owners. And so we'd been doing that for quite some time. But part of the decision for, we really had to work through what their transition was really going to look like. These employees who were buying stock were doing it for the feeling of ownership. But what happens if something happened to John and Jerry? Did they really want to be the owner of the company and the responsibility that came with it? And so we had to make a decision about what direction we were going to go in. And private equity and a strategic buyout was absolutely not on the table. They have a legacy that they want to preserve, and that was not going to meet those needs. So it was either a management buyout or an ESOP. And we made the decision that broad ownership was the way that we wanted to go. And so then an ESOP was really the only option for us. So we started that process in 2014 and became a formal ESOP in 2015.
And do you think, although this is the only company you've really led, but you travel around, you speak on leadership, you talk to people about leadership, do you think running an employee-owned company is inherently a lot different or not that different from running another sort of company?
I don't think it's I don't think it's different, but I don't think it's a lot different. I mean, we still have the same exact challenges that everybody faces of how do you add value to your customer? How do you create great culture? How do you inspire people to buy your products and come to work every day? I do think that it adds an extra dimension. My employees are amazing. They are so invested in what we're doing. And I believe that's because they value the fact that they get to share in the success of the company. And so we're a happy company. Anytime anybody comes into Stone Age, they say, I want to work there. How can I get a job here? Everybody just looks like they love being here. And I feel like that's that extra level of investment. And then, of course, it does add you want people to have the ownership mentality. And so there comes a responsibility with that transparency. Probably an extra layer of questioning. Why are we doing these things? But I wouldn't want it any other way. Yeah. That is, to me, what makes a great culture, and that I want people to be invested. And so that employee ownership opportunity really offers that.
Yeah. And has it been a nice platform for you to explore your inherent interests in leadership and what it means to be a leader and so forth?
Absolutely. I think that's why this has been such a great fit for Stone Age and me, is that I think that this is, I've drank the ESOP Kool-Aid, the employee ownership Kool-Aid, and it ties in exactly to the kind of leader who I want to be.
So here's what I was wondering as I was also thinking about speaking with you, is like, here's a woman that's CEO of an employee-owned company who really is into leadership. You write a blog on leadership, you speak on leadership and so forth. Doesn't that make you sort of vulnerable to people evaluating you as like, does she really do what she says?
Oh, absolutely. but I believe that that's what makes you a stronger leader, is that you can't just get up there and talk about it. You have to actually walk the walk. And so I do that every day. And it doesn't mean that I don't make mistakes and that I don't sometimes get frustrated or do the wrong thing. Yeah. But it adds that extra layer of accountability.
Yeah, but gosh, aren't you, you know, once you become the expert on something, aren't you supposed to behave as an expert, like not make mistakes anymore?
Oh gosh, I'm not an expert. I still learn every single day how to lead and how to not lead. So if I ever become an expert, then I should probably get out of leadership, because that means I've stopped learning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm curious about what you think of the role of ambition in leadership. I just interviewed Dave Thibodeau of SCA, and I was talking with him over the phone the other day too. And he said, I told him I was going to be talking with you. He said, you are driven and ambitious, which I think is a great compliment. But how do those qualities translate in leadership?
Sure. Well, for me, it's definitely put me into where I am today. I am ambitious, but not in a at all costs kind of way.
Yeah.
I just like pushing boundaries. I have pushed boundaries my entire life. Since I was 2 years old, my mom told me, you are the boss of our family. And so I've always just figured out, how do I push myself? And I do that in how I show up with athleticism, and how I push myself physically, how I push myself at my work. And so I think people think it's just pure ambition that comes. Part of it is that it's what I'm driven to do every day. I can't not try to be great at what I'm doing, because I always see like there's that next thing out there. There's that next thing out there. And I have to balance that. It can be unhealthy at times, but it's so much fun to see what you're capable of, and you hit that next thing and I know I can do something more. And that's what gets me up every day.
Wow. Do you ever rest from that?
I don't need a whole lot of sleep, and so, which is a good thing. I do try to rest and recover. I believe that self-care is a discipline, not a luxury. So I do try to take care of myself, but I would say that I am on more than I'm off.
Wow. You also talk a lot about the importance of really effective communications. And so in your role as a leader, and as you're communicating, what are a couple of things that go through your mind when you say, okay, I need to communicate whatever it is effectively?
Sure.
You have a couple of mantras that you tell yourself?
I do. I always know what the outcome is. What outcome am I looking for? I ask myself that question. If it's something that's planned or even spontaneous. What do I want? What do I want to get out of this right now? And that way it sets the right tone. And I always mm-hmm. want something to be a positive experience and to have a positive outcome, even if it's a difficult conversation. So I think about that first. Then I think about my tone. There are lots of ways to say the same thing. And I always, people want to hear the positive side of it. So you can say something like, I don't want you to do that. Mm-hmm. Or, hey, you're on the right track. Have you thought about doing mm-hmm. it this way? Mm-hmm. You know, what different outcome could you achieve? And that puts the puts a positive spin on it, and it inspires people to think about what they can do more of rather than what they should stop doing.
Well, so that takes a lot of discipline, because if you just want to have a 30-second conversation, how long do you think about it before you have that 30-second conversation?
You have to think about it in the moment. But I look at every conversation I have as a crucial conversation. And what do I want people to experience after they leave my office or stop talking with me? Mm-hmm. And I want it to be a positive, memorable, impactful conversation, even if it is a difficult one. And so I have to run through mm-hmm. those things quickly in my mind, or even when I'm speaking. How do I take this and turn it from a negative into a positive mm-hmm. right now in the moment? Wow. So you can't be lazy in your communication if you want to be a really effective communicator. You always have to know this is a crucial conversation.
Yeah, some of the worst mistakes I've made in relationships had to do with me speaking off the cuff and not doing just what you've said, and then regretting, like, how did that come out of my mouth?
Me too. Me too.
So as a leader, do you communicate differently at work than you do, like, with a peer or even at home?
No, I don't think so. In fact, my husband often tells me, like, quit being the CEO. Are we really going to talk about effective communication or you know, the outcomes that you want? I use the same language. No, I think it's woven into everything that I do. Certainly, I consider who I'm talking to and the outcome that I want, but pretty much what you see is what you get with me. Mm-hmm. If you read my blogs, that's me. It's 100% authentic. And so, no, I would say that I try to be myself, and I'm a pretty informal communicator. I like to have it be fun and, like I said, a positive experience. So I think that it's pretty much the same whoever I'm talking with.
That's cool. I want to remind listeners again, this is ProCo 360. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and this is the show featuring entrepreneurs and leaders who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. I'm speaking with Carrie Siggins of Stone Age. Go to ProCo360.com to subscribe to the newsletter, read my blog, and catch the books I'm listening to on Audible. Please rate ProCo 360 in your app. It helps a ton. I appreciate it. Carrie, I'm wondering if a lot of the things that you talk about, your style and your purposefulness and communication and such, I mean, you mentioned in our previous conversation with me that being a woman in an industrial company has been unexpected for many of your peers, for others. So how does your management style and your leadership style translate into that world and expectations, right, within it?
Absolutely. Well, I can say that's nothing more of a man's world than industrial cleaning. There's nothing like cleaning sewers that scream, like, I'm in a man's world. And so, to be honest, I haven't put a lot of time into thinking about it. It's not something that I prep myself for, okay, I'm going in and I'm going to be the only woman here, which many times I am. But I certainly have to have awareness around it, because I am in a man's world, and there are certain expectations, or, you know, people don't believe in me. I actually had somebody tell me, I can't even believe that you have been as successful as you could. I never thought a woman could run a company like Stone Age and be successful in this industry.
Is that annoying or flattering?
I take it as flattering.
Yeah.
That's, you can always choose how you want to take any comment. And so I choose to say, thank you. I really appreciate that. I've worked really hard to get where I am and build a great company. And so I appreciate that. Thank you. You could choose to look at it a different way. And so there have been times that I've had comments that have been made to me, even recently, where I thought, you probably wouldn't say that if I was a woman, but I let it go. It doesn't matter.
I mean, if you were a man.
I mean, I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. you wouldn't have said to me that if I was a man like that. But it doesn't really matter, because I'm going to choose to look at it as a positive thing and to keep on doing what I'm doing, even if I have people who don't believe in me. And that could be anyone. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, but it's definitely interesting. I was just in Germany at a meeting with some pretty big companies, and it was 15 men and me. And it's pretty much just the way the industry works. And I feel like for the most part, I can use it to my advantage, but and it's helpful to have a diverse group of people in the room. But I think that for some people, it's always there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You've again, stepped out on your own. You kind of broken a mold in a sense with this whole concern about safety in your industry. Talk about that for a bit.
Sure. So shockingly, first of all, water blasting, water jetting is probably one of the most dangerous things you can do. Ultra high pressure water. Most people are doing it manually, which means they have the hose in their hand. Wow. Mm-hmm. And there's no set standard of how you should do water blasting like you would with welding or being an electrician. And I think that that's a really big downfall for our industry. And there are so many incidences, water jet cuts, water jet fatalities, and there's no need to, because there's a safe way to do the work. And the industry is moving more and more to automation. So a couple of other people in the industry and I got together about 18 months ago and said, we have to stop this. We've got to figure out how to get basic safety standards set in our industry, that you can do this, whether it's in the United States, Europe, China, wherever you go. Mm-hmm. This is the basic way that we do this work. And we started this movement, and it has picked up a tremendous amount of speed over the past 18 months.
So it sounds like it's gratifying for you personally. Has it had an impact on Stone Age as a business?
Absolutely. So first and foremost, I believe that being at the forefront of safety is the right thing to do. There's no reason that anybody should die in our industry, and everybody should take a personal responsibility for that. But of course, it benefits Stone Age, because we are the leaders in tooling and automated equipment, and it puts us in the forefront of the conversation. And I get calls I was just invited by Dow Chemical and BASF, two of the biggest chemical companies in the world, the two biggest chemical companies in the world, to come and speak to senior leadership about what this movement is. And that certainly elevates Stone Age and says, hey, we want you to use their equipment in their plant. Yeah. They're doing things that are making the industry safer. We appreciate that. So there's a direct benefit.
That's really cool. So I know you're out speaking some on leadership. Mm-hmm. You're working on this safety movement, right? So you're gone doing some things. How does that impact the team back home? Is that good? Is it bad? Is it creating different opportunities? How do you see that?
So I think it ties back to what we talked about at the beginning of the conversation. If I didn't have a really great team at home, being able to run the company and to keep things moving, then I wouldn't be able to go out and work on these other initiatives that aren't in the business. It's on the business. And so I believe that the team, we've had to develop and evolve so that I don't have to be there quite as much. But they certainly have stepped up and are doing a great job.
Do they see what you're doing, which is really a passion-driven activity, do they see that as a company thing or as a carry thing? And is there any kind of tension around that?
I think that everybody absolutely supports what I'm doing. They know that it's going to benefit the company, and that being at the forefront of leadership is absolutely where Stone Age needs to be. But they also know that I have a personal passion for speaking, and they want me to pursue that. In fact, my board of directors has said, the more that you can do this, the better it is for the company and for you. And so that's really something that's great about Stone Age, is that it's not just about work, but it's also about pursuing your personal passion. Mm-hmm. And especially when those two can be combined, it's a really magical thing. And so I feel 100% supported in this effort.
That's really cool. That's really cool. And so you become a role model for employees that have other interests and passions that tie and support one another.
And we do that all the time.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So you're based in Durango. You said that the company's founded here. There's no temptation to leave at all, is there?
No.
Yeah. No. So are you able to find enough workers and so forth here?
There are some roles that we struggle with.
Yeah, I mean, there must be some challenges with being
absolutely.
In Durango.
I think the two biggest challenges we face are finding talented, the right kind of employees for the future. It's not a manufacturing community here. So we do have to bring people in from outside the area, which is always a risk. And then the second piece is that transportation. We have a transportation issue. There's no major highways, no major airport. And so we have to work to overcome those.
And you've got
things.
Big equipment in some
we
cases,
do.
Right?
Yes.
So are you sending flatbeds out of Durango to some other major distribution center to ship products around the world?
Yes.
So, you know, that's got to create some disincentives as far as cost.
Sure.
You know,
it's a big balance for us because we obviously our customers only want to pay for something they have find value in.
Yeah.
And transportation to and from Durango isn't necessarily that. So,
yeah
we are working on how do we use our other hubs as places to keep inventory and try to reduce shipping costs, but and still keep the core of what we do here in Durango.
Yeah. Well, and sticking with the theme of this show, ProCo 360, which is world-class entrepreneurs who choose Colorado, what have you found about the Colorado entrepreneurial environment, the business climate here that has really been helpful for you?
I think Colorado is one of the most innovative states, and it attracts some of the most talented people. The quality of life here is outstanding. And so people want to be here, and really smart people want to be here. And so I think that it's a great state to be based out of. I love being on the Western Slope. I'm a Western Slope girl born and raised in Montrose. And so I think it's really cool to have this great company here. But if I was going to leave Durango, I would stay in Colorado.
Yeah.
It attracts just amazing people.
Hmm. Well, and when you reflect back on what you've done through your career at this point, I mean, I think we learn the best lessons the hard way. So what have you learned? What are you doing differently that makes you most proud?
Listening more. Hmm. I'm a talker. Uh-huh. And I can certainly fill up the room with lots of words. Hmm. And I have learned how to ask really great questions and tease information and stories from people. And you can't do that when you talk. And so I think that's probably one of the biggest changes that I've made as a leader is just, you know, wait, why am I talking?
Yeah.
Stop talking and just listen and ask great questions and let other people tell their stories.
Cool. Well, I can't let that comment go without asking a question, which is, what's one of your favorite core foundational elements of a good question?
It needs to be soft enough. It needs to be direct and soft, right? You don't want to put anybody on the spot. Questioning people can sometimes feel very awkward. And so you don't want people to feel like you're hammering them with questions to try to get information out of them. So it is about having directness and softness at the same time. So one of the things that you said was this, you know, what did you mean by that? Tell me a little bit more. And it teases the story out rather than why did you do that? Why did you make this decision?
Yeah.
Those are hard on the spot questions.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really about teasing it out.
That's cool. You've gotten better at it?
Yes. Definitely.
Oh, that's cool. Hey, let's wrap up. And I'm Dave Tabor. And today on ProCo 360, you've been listening to my conversation with Carrie Siggins of Stone Age Water Blast Tools. Carrie, it's been fantastic. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Listeners, thanks for joining me on ProCo 360, where we say live, work, love Colorado, because you and I and my guests can be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. You make the show successful by subscribing to the ProCo 360 podcast and submitting a review. Thanks again to show sponsors, MicroStar Keg Logistics, Community Banks of Colorado, Kinsley Meetings, and the Colorado Chamber of Commerce. And a final thanks to Ty and Dustin here at the 92.9 The Point Studio in Durango, Colorado. That's the show. Live, work, love Colorado.